Hey guys, this is Cap. The episode you're about to listen to was recorded just after the Bay Area Maker Faire and the Orlando Maker Faire earlier this year. Unfortunately, some things came up and we weren't able to edit and produce the episode for a release on time we expected to. But it's coming to you now, it's still fun, it's still exciting, and it still chronicles our adventures at those events. This is just me informing you that the us of the past may be talking as though some things which have already come to pass are in fact the future, but I assure you, it is in fact now the past. And now, the past. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very scientific episode of Nerdy Show. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
I'm John.
I'm Cope.
I'm Kristen.
I'm Jessica.
And this is a Nerdy Show SciTech episode. This is a double-header SciTech episode. First, we're going to be talking about Maker Faire, both Orlando and the big one in the San Francisco Bay Area. And also, we're going to be dropping some science with Mr. Reggie Watts, the rapper, comedian, performance artist that you may have heard of. We'll get into who he is and what he does in a little bit. But first, we're going to talk about the phenomenon, the massive yearly event that is Maker Faire, perhaps in your hometown and definitely in San Francisco, the biggest one of all. Now, I've got here, for the first time ever, actually, Kristen is in the studio with us. I didn't realize that it was such a momentous occasion.
Yeah, I don't sound like crap now. It's amazing.
another rare treat that John's with us here. And we got both John and Jessica, our SciTech correspondents, on in the same episode, which only happens once in a blue moon. We also have a special guest, Mr. John Bent Cope. And that is his real name, and it is also his Minecraft handle.
If you want to wail on him a little.
He's here because he is part of the Orlando Maker community.
I am.
And was a major player in the Orlando Maker Faire. And wow, you can wiggle your eyebrows up and down. But that's a visual component that will not be translated into radio. But imagine the ocean, and then imagine a human eyebrow.
Oh, that makes me sound like I'm salty or something.
You are.
How would you know?
Don't ask questions.
You don't want to know the answer to.
All right, guys. So let's start with Orlando Maker Faire. That took place in late May, the weekend of the 26th. And I wasn't there for it because I was at Phoenix Comic Con, so I'm going to need to live it through all you guys.
Boom.
And Jessica and I will be grilling you and stopping you as things come up.
Yeah, get ready.
Maker Faire was set up at the Orange County Fairgrounds. It was fantastic. There was a large outdoor area full of a bunch of spray paint and water and people launching trebuchets filled with grapefruits. And on the inside was full of R2-D2 droids, Tesla speakers, and a bunch of other things that just all sorts of loud and pretty.
What qualifies as a Tesla speaker? That sounds interesting and relevant to me.
So I'm sure everyone here has heard of a Tesla coil, right? Where you put your hand on it and it makes your hair stand up?
Correct.
So you take a Tesla coil and you arc it to something that's grounded. And then you flicker when it's on and off to an audio signal. And you can actually hear the sound that's coming out of it pretty well. And so you can play good music through it. It sounds a bit sharp and it sounds a bit choppy. But you can figure out that they are playing the final countdown when you walk in the room.
Isn't that how ArcAttack works?
ArcAttack is a really, really awesome band who perform at San Francisco from time to time, perhaps even this year.
They were there. They are always there, actually. I don't know if they've ever not been there.
Nice.
They perform using gigantic Tesla coils. They perform music with them.
That's fantastic. I think they actually use them as like their amplifier, like as you said, as a speaker.
I have no clue how
you
they
can
do
get
what
some
do.
You can get some pretty good volume out of these things.
Yeah,
I would confirm that. Yes, they do.
I've been pushing for Nerdapalooza to bring them out for years now, but it's all a matter of finding the right facility to actually allow that to happen.
That is correct.
Because even if it was absolutely safe, it would terrify the shit out of staff.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, I don't think the social or the Beecham would be down with that.
No, they would not.
Oh, well, it took place at the Central Florida Fairgrounds. I know that much. I know I've heard some things about some kind of wacky car race of some kind?
The Power Wheels Racing. So Power Wheels Racing was started by
Power Wheels.
Pow Pow Power Wheels?
Power Wheels. Are you too young for that?
Yes.
Wow.
But also, yes.
The Crossfire theme.
He just turned
Crossfire. You
that was about the same time.
I don't know. All right.
We might not have been able to afford those stations.
So there are some modded out Power Wheels, huh?
There were. The rules for the Power Wheels racers were you got one stock Power Wheels, and you were allowed to put in $500 of your own money into it, not including the money you spent into the Power Wheel itself. And after putting in $500, you came out and you raced it through our actually tire racetrack, which was fantastic.
Yeah, that was styling racetrack.
It looked professional.
It did. I don't know how that came proud. Together. But
not the cars so much. But
no, the cars did not.
Those cars
awesome. Two of the cars looked like they came out of Junkyard Wars, and then ours looked pretty stock for a Power Wheels, minus the water cannons and rockets mounted to the side.
I think you should tell them that the rockets were covered in glitter.
They were. Most of the car was covered in glitter. The rockets especially.
Are there pictures of these things online? Is there some video?
Entire HD video on my phone.
All right. Well. Let me know when you upload.
It's probably horrible.
We'll link whatever we can find to this episode's page. This sounds amazing.
There's tons of stuff on Flickr and YouTube right now, OrlandoMiniMakerFair.org.
So how'd this race work exactly? Is it what I imagine? Is it basically Mario Kart?
It was actually Mario Kart pretty close to. We got the Mario Kart theme playing through a bullhorn.
Yeah.
along with our very own announcer and yellow and checkered flags and the whole nine yards and a pit area too.
Yeah, the hazard flag was needed.
The hazard flag was needed as Famalab's car caught on fire.
It was epic.
We managed to go a lap and a half though with smoke belching out the back of it. That was pretty good. I'm proud of that.
That was the smoke screen attack.
We have a car.
Yeah,
on
we
fire.
Caught that.
Hex deployed some air quotes there. I'm wondering. I take it that was not intended.
No.
No, no, the $50 electric motor we have is now unusable.
Oof. Well, I mean, to be fair, I feel like you can't have this kind of racing without something catching on fire. I feel like it's just expected.
It would be a completely hollow race without flames.
But if you guys are really cool, you would have also made it so that when it caught on fire, it actually smoke screened.
We actually intended to have a smoke screen. We didn't have the power for it, but the batteries we were using, though. So I'm glad we got to at least do it in some capacity.
That's why you use incendiaries, right?
Or you could have just spent like $3 on a lighter and some smoke bombs.
Exactly.
Oh, we are already at $502.
But you can make smoke bombs with
disqualified.
Potassium nitrate and sugar or something? You just cook it down, and that's how you make a pretty decent standard black smoke bomb?
Do you have the ratio? How many times have
you
done
this? Go to unitednuclear.com. They will tell you.
Links on this page.
What else can you buy at unitednuclear.com, John?
Uranium, plutonium, thorium... radiation detectors, shit tons of just basic lab glassware, pretty much any cool...
Europian paint?
Yeah, Europian paint, which is awesome.
You didn't hear it here, folks. You didn't hear it here.
John goes to sleep cuddling a baby blanket in his favorite copy of the Anarchist Cookbook.
Well, I've never owned one, but I do have a rather burny blue laser that's about 1 watt maximum output. So, you know, death rays.
He writes messages on food and fruits.
I'm actually missing a chunk of my knuckle thanks to the laser cutter at Famalab. So.
Oh, good God. That's why I was afraid of actually building one. Because they sell like 100 watt infrared lasers from Unity Nuclear.
Tell us about Famalab real quick. This seems like a good opportunity to do so.
That's a good segue. Personal injury. Famalab is a community of makers and artists and technologists and programmers and anybody who's interested in doing things and being productive and making the stuff that's going to make tomorrow awesome. We have a 4,000 square foot warehouse in Longwood that's packed with a laser cutter, a bunch of 3D printers, a large collection of woodworking tools, CNC mills for circuit boards and foam and things like that, along with something we call the War Room, where we hold classes and events and teach people from the community how to do what we do every day.
Very cool. And I've been there, and just as it was getting set up, mind you, and it was pretty sweet. Jessica also paid a visit out there when she was as representative of Parallax, the company she works for. You did some kind of demo there, didn't you?
Yes, we were pushing our wares, sort of. No, so yeah, for the propeller microcontroller, did a little class before the War Room, I guess, was set up. But it was really cool. So actually, Famalab inspired me to start a hackerspace out in Sacramento because I just thought it was really cool and wanted to join something similar where I was at. But there wasn't anything, so now I'm making my own.
Jessica is the writer of Geek Cred, which we syndicate on Nerdy Show, And she's actually going to be chronicling the building of her hackerspace over in Sacramento, California, as it develops. What's the latest on that, by the way?
So we just got our articles of incorporation back, so we're an official business entity. Now we just have to file our tax paperwork, and I need to get back into it some more after my crazy travel schedule over the last couple months. So
yeah, because you went to the Orient.
I did go to the Orient. Before that, I was in D.C. and also in New York. So, been all over the place.
Yeah, you've been really busy. You were interviewed by Adafruit over in China and Taiwan.
You checked
out some factories for Parallax.
Yeah, met some, checked out some factories and our manufacturers and the people that make our propeller chip. Since we're getting ready to put our second microcontroller, the Propeller 2, into production. So did some pricing with them and met with them. China's a really crazy place, especially visiting the manufacturing places out there where I saw Stormtrooper helmets and Optimus Prime helmets being made by the thousands, which was kind of eerie and weird to see. But
by China.
Still really cool. Yeah.
I think you all know where I'm going with this.
Didn't you also meet like Bill Nye in New York?
In D.C. Very briefly, and it was really awesome at the U.S. Science and Engineering Fest. So I was working it for Parallax, teaching people how to solder, and Bill Nye was doing a signing, and I ran over there for like 5 minutes and gushed and, you know, was carefully patted on the head, like, thank you, I'm so glad you like me, and, you know, sent on my way. But it was still really cool.
That's awesome. That is very awesome. When can we expect to see that interview with you and Adafruit? Is that up yet?
Yep, that's up. So it's just, adafruit.com/ask. It's Ask an Engineer. So all of them are archived right after they're recorded.
We'll link to that on this episode's page. We're going to cut away to some music real quick, and then we'll come back with more about Orlando Maker Faire and the Maker Faire in San Francisco Bay Area. What do you got for us, Hex?
Well, there is, since we're talking about science of the unique variety, I thought I would feature some Consortium of Genius, the FUMP's own band of mad scientists, and they have a song that they recently released called They Said I Was Mad. As you can tell, it's kind of mad scientist ranty, so it's pretty awesome. It's
highly appropriate.
Yes, yes.
apart.
Do you think I'm mad? Well, it is not I who am crazy. It is I who am mad.
Welcome back from that delicious song.
Nom.
Now, tell us more about the Orlando Maker Faire, aside from that kick-ass Power Wheels race with rockets and oil slicks and everything. I'm right about that. There were rockets and oil slicks, weren't there?
There were rockets, oil slicks, water cannons.
And a blue shell.
We wanted to slap a blue shell onto a quadcopter and have it fly around the track. Dropping little snapdragon, little poppers on the first place racer. We never got to that, though. Next year.
However, a quadricopter actually filming parts of it. So
Orlando company, Hoverfly, came out and demoed their products as well as filmed the Power Wheels race from the air.
I just thought the best thing about the race is the one that you thought you were going to lose, that was going to lose, the little
Arctic Cat.
Yeah, Arctic Cat. Oh, we were cheering for him so hard. He was trucking. He was going so fast.
He was lapped. Everyone.
Poor little guy. Twice. You're like, come on, you could do it. Yeah.
And he just chugged along at the same speed, and everyone else was like, yeah.
Yeah, Arctic Cat.
And then they burned out their motor, and they're like, I can't move anymore.
Yes, that's right. Everyone else exploded.
Yeah.
And Arctic Cat
blew up the engine. One of the other vehicles, their steering broke down, and he had to kick his tires into the turn, and then kick his tires back into the straightaway. And then Arctic Cat, just slow and steady, made it through the whole race.
Very proud.
Well, this was going on outside of the race.
There was that really cool metalworking.
Yeah, the sand casting, that was awesome.
Yeah, there was a full presentation of sand casting. They went through the whole process of melting down the base aluminum, I think they were using that time. Although a lot of that stuff can actually burn like bronze and you know, related metals, just not necessarily iron or steel.
How does sand casting work exactly? That's where you like make a sand hill and you do some shit inside of it with metals?
And
you make the thingies.
Excuse my layman terms here.
Well, they actually were doing two different kinds of casting. Both obviously start with melting down the metals, but one of the ones that they were using was a lost foam method, in which case you make a foam object. You effectively put a chute down into it. In other words, you bury it in sand, right?
Right.
Then you stick a tube basically into it for the metal to pour down into. And when you pour it in, it actually vaporizes the foam and occupies the space that it was in. So it takes the shape of the form inside.
Interesting.
And then the other form, the normal form, you basically pound the sand into sort of like a box shape. You have like a frame, and then you pound the sand into that and you use an object to make the hole, basically. So you basically make a cavern inside that's actually shaped like the object you want, normally by using... an object made of wood, or you can use ceramics or that kind of thing. And then, you know, once again, you make holes and you fill it in.
Was there a huge focus on education at this Maker Faire?
I'd say there was a decent one, certainly. And two separate groups with soldering stations, like soldering classes.
Massive. They also, I think, didn't they have like a woodworking station too, where they could teach you how to do woodworking? They had like a scrim saw. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a tool shop practically there. And then once again, the metal casting group outside too. So, you know, and that's not even getting like creative in the sense of watching people doing what they were doing. I mean, there's like a crazy spray paint guy doing like spacescapes and,
oh my gosh,
you know, very, very rapidly and very, very proficiently. So there were actual courses, and then just watching people work was an education in itself.
And Cope, you're a crazy spray paint guy in a lot of ways.
I was.
But you're not the one he was talking about, but you're a different one. You actually had a Kickstarter project that was successfully funded for a little thing that there's a part of, at least, sitting on the table here. It's this kind of, it looks like a guillotine with a spray paint atomizer at the top of it.
Yeah, that sounds good, a guillotine with an atomizer. No, this is a little thing I've laser cut out of some plywood using the tools at Famalab, actually. And this is a wood frame that the spray can pops into, and then a solenoid above it pulls down a plunger that clicks the top of the spray can shut. And so as soon as I power on the solenoid, it sprays the can, and as soon as I turn it off, it lets go of the can. And this frame was dangled from two stepper motors mounted on a wooden frame, and I was able to move that around the page according to data that I gathered from a webcam. So I was turning the spray can into a spray paint photo booth.
So it was actually spraying people's faces?
It got really close to it. All of the parts of the photo booth worked individually. I was just having some trouble getting the can itself to spray as it was moving around the face. But I was able to take people's pictures, convert it into all the dots I needed, and then send that over and move the spray can head around in the shape of people's heads. Just didn't actually paint at the same time, fortunately.
He was having technical difficulties all all day.
I was, but it was a Maker Faire, and I maked a lot at the Maker Faire.
You did. One of my favorite moments from the Maker Faire was that running into a friend of mine, Jeff Douglas, who's a friend of Nerdapalooza and whatnot, really cool photographer. And he had his kids there at the Maker Faire at the Famalab booth, and his son was actually learning how to solder. And so it was really cool watching his son, who's like, oh my gosh, I think he's like 6 or 7 or something mm-hmm. like that, getting excited about soldering and making at that age. It just, like, it really made me very happy. I thought it was very successful. Like, that moment, it was like, this is a success.
Yeah. That's actually pretty indicative of what Famalab does. At the Famalab booth, we were showing off thermoelectric axolotl cooling, teaching people the basics of 3D printing their own parts, and had a very large area to teach people how to solder. And that's what we do as Famalab. We're sort of based around enriching the community and educating others as to what we do. And so getting people in and getting people in with their kids in is, like I said, very indicative of what we do on a day-to-day basis. And is actually how Famalab has grown so much in the last year is through these classes and getting parents and their kids and people from the community involved in taking control of their own tech.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I heard rumor, too, was Mitch Altman there teaching people how to solder?
Mitch Altman was there.
That's awesome.
Mitch Altman is kind of a rock star of the Hackerspaces community.
Wait, is he the crazy face that made the glasses?
Yes, TV Pecan.
I thought I saw him, and I was like, no, that's not that guy. He was the guy that came up during the safecasting thing,
him.
And I kind of like looked at him, and I was like,
he looked really amazing. Like, he had so many awesome stories and projects in his body.
I was like, God, isn't that that guy from like Maker? And I was like, no, why the hell would he be down at this one?
So he's actually from Make Magazine or something.
Well, yeah,
he
doesn't work with them, but he's like, once again, one of the major guys that's like featured. He made the TV Pecan. He made these tripped out glasses that was another project that was featured in Make Magazine.
He also founded the Hackerspace Noise Bridge and I believe a successful restaurant.
He's
pretty prolific in what he does. And
how'd you guys get him out to this? This is the first annual Orlando Maker Faire.
We have a member of the lab, Dave Casey, runs TEDx Orlando and is very much global in who he talks to in regards to the Hackerspace community. And started talking to Mitch, and him and Mitch are friends, and so Mitch came out and decided he would teach a class on soldering at the Maker Faire, and that was pretty fantastic to see him out.
That's rad. Well, let's switch gears and hop the country over to the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
Jessica, you've covered the Maker Faire in San Francisco for us for the last 2 years, actually. We'll have links to all your coverage, be it in podcast or article form, on this episode's page, but what about this year?
This year was actually the largest Maker Faire that they've had so far. I think they said they had around 100,000 people that came both days.
Holy shit.
Wow.
I think was what they said. It was packed and absolutely insane. So I've gone to Maker Faire the last 3 years. This was actually the 7th year that they've done it in the Bay Area. And every year it's just something completely different and it's something totally new and interesting. So, for example, this year, I think the most interesting thing I saw was this group called Viper Pilots. And it's a high school team who built a flight simulator in the cockpit of an old Cessna.
Wow.
I didn't get to try it, but I saw people trying it, and it looked pretty epic.
Wow.
Family has a new project.
High school, eh?
Right. And, I mean, that's what the most impressive part of it to me is, you know, it's a group of high school kids and,
jealous.
You know, makes me feel like a slacker for the things that I didn't do in high school.
Yeah, that
makes
me feel unaccomplished.
You know.
Yeah.
I wish you could see the disappointment on these guys' faces.
Damn. Okay. So what else was happening there?
So Architect was there as usual, putting on a jolly good show, playing their usuals, Doctor Who theme, Legend of Zelda, things like that. Always a good time. Although they're starting to do this like weird cage dancing thing where they get members of the audience to come in and dance in a cage as the Tesla coils are going off. And I'm not really too big a fan of that. But
dancing in the Faraday cage?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's cool after, and then, you know, after like 5 people, you just see these people awkwardly making moves and it's like, okay, you know. They did the same thing they did last year where he had an actual electric guitar. So he was controlling the Tesla coils with his guitar.
Oh, wow.
That's fantastic.
Which was pretty amazing.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah. But I mean, just usual, just kind of walking around. Cupcake cars were there, which are always tons of fun to see. There was rumors, I never actually saw it, of a Tron bike. I guess it was also at South by Southwest, but it was an actual bike that you pedaled and then got an interactive Tron experience while you were pedaling.
That sounds complicated.
But it sounded pretty awesome.
Was the rumor that it was somehow Disney licensed or something? An interactive Tron experience sounds specialized.
Yeah, I don't know if it was actually Disney or if somebody was just kind of using the name as people do.
Right.
But from what I've heard, I heard people that saw it at South by Southwest and said that it was absolutely incredible and really well done. So, but I mean, the neat part about Maker Faire is that it's such a huge area and there's different buildings that you could see different things, but also just walking around outside and you see people riding these, you know, crazy, you know, 6 foot tall or, you know, like 10 foot tall bikes, you know, bikes that breathe fire and these really cool light up dragons where each piece of the body is a different rainbow color and just really neat things. There was a Dalek, a guy that built a Dalek car that you rode in. And then he spoke through it and then had his voice modulated to sound like a Dalek. So he was just driving around interacting with people and making fun of them and talking about how he's going to kill the doctor and all of that really cool stuff.
That's super rad.
Yeah, this seems to be a theme about the Maker Faire is that even if people don't have a booth to show off what they do on a day-to-day date basis or their hobbies, a lot of people will just show up and attend the fair wearing things or using things or covered in things that they themselves have made just as a showing off, hey, this is what I do too, and we're all makers.
Right.
It's like a more complicated comic convention with cosplay.
Yes, and usually a precursor to Burning Man.
Yeah.
So a lot of people bring out their projects that they're going to bring to Burning Man in a month or so.
Which is a really good field test because, you know, stuff always goes wrong. Might as well get the kinks out beforehand.
Yeah, better going wrong there than all the way out at Burning Man.
Nothing like being electrocuted by your EL suit
in the desert.
We actually had somebody who was at Burning Man with their hexagonal light honeycomb sculpture.
Oh, that was so cool!
That was from Burning
beautiful,
Man?
This beautiful wrapped around hexagon grid where every other hexagon was lighting up and changing colors. That was actually at Burning Man. And then came down to the Orlando Mini Maker Faire to exhibit what they did. And so that was pretty fantastic to see that.
Yeah.
In the same room with all of the R2-D2s and laser projectors and Moog synthesizer circuit bending world champions and everything like that was the screen printing, where any attendee could walk up, pay a little bit of money for a t-shirt, and then screen print their very own t-shirt, which is what I'm wearing right now.
Oh, yeah, I was unaware of that.
Yeah, so the front of it says Orlando Maker, and the back of it mine says, I made this t-shirt at Orlando Mini Maker Faire. And so that was a pretty good draw. We got a lot of people bringing in their stuff. And actually, at the beginning of the night, or at the beginning of the day, we screen printed our own aprons and then burned those and then gave those aprons to people that were making their own shirts. And so in the beginning of the day, we made the tools that people would use to make their own shirts with the tools we already had.
Very, very cool. Some cool stuff happened at San Francisco last year, like OK Go, for example, played a set while submerged in water. And other wacky shit like that. Any cool things like that happen at this year's Maker Faire?
Not really from famous side of things. Adam Savage does a talk every year. I didn't get to catch it, but what I thought was even cooler afterwards is that he was interviewed by Super Awesome Sylvia. She has a show on the Make channel, and she's pretty adorable. And this kid, Joey Huddy, so they interviewed him afterwards, and it was like this cute kid PR stunt. But it was nice, because that was a really cool part of this fair, is they really highlighted the young kid makers. And there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of them doing some pretty cool stuff. Again, making me feel like a slacker that, you know, when I was 11, I wasn't soldering up kits and making my own kits to sell and meeting the president like Joey did. But
oh, God.
Joey, you bastard.
So, did they have anything particularly exciting for education over there, though?
Well, they always do classes, so they always have workshops. They had some e-textiles workshops, which is sewing circuits into clothing. Soldering workshops, as usual. MakerBot was doing demonstrations on their stuff. You know, learn to program an Arduino. A bunch of those, actually. And then talks. Generally, a lot of talks on how to do certain projects or how to get started in making or why people are makers and what the whole movement means.
That's some really important stuff, though. I mean, it's kind of hard to communicate, I'd imagine, like how to actually start.
Right.
to somebody, I mean, if you actually think about it, like, how do you do any of this stuff at all? Why do you do it? What kinds of problems do you come into? How do you even source materials? I mean, it all gets much more complicated than, you know, when you just sort of think about, like, oh, I'm going to do this this weekend, and then you find out that, you know, it takes you, like, a month of concentrated effort to do something you thought you'd be able to do in half a day.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really hard. I mean, that's why I like going to Maker Faire, too, is kind of getting that reality check.
Yeah.
Because it's not something that I always think about. It's like, oh, yeah, people just make stuff. Why, you know, it's not hard.
Yeah.
But it is daunting for the first timer. Like, I just had, so we have a little robot badge as our soldering project, and I turn them into earrings. And then when I wear them, all it is just a little blinking light soldered to a PCB. And I made them into earrings because it was just kind of a natural progression of things.
Yeah.
And people just thought it was amazing. Everybody wanted to buy it. They were like, how do I buy this? Where do I get it? And I was like, yeah, you could just make it. Just buy the kit on our website and go to Joann's and pick up some earring supplies and you're done. Really interesting crowd. If you ever have a chance, I highly recommend checking out a Bay Area Maker Faire or a mini Maker Faire in your area too.
Well, the great thing about makerspaces is, you know, if you can find a makerspace or hackerspace in your area, then they're always really open with helping you understand the methods and of the trade and how to make things yourself. And if there isn't one, then you can always travel to a Maker Faire.
Also, you can take the mentality of, if one doesn't exist, make it.
hackerspaces in general, and makerspaces and hackerspaces generally belong to a global group called Hackerspaces. You can check this out at hackerspaces.org. And there's a wiki there with a list of all existing hackerspaces in the world.
Oh, nice.
It's actually how a lot of people find out about hackerspaces in their area is they find out about some other hackerspace. They want one in their area. They go to hackerspaces.org and they see that there is one and they join up. Or if there isn't one, they'll make one, which is how Famalab got started. There wasn't one, someone wanted one, and now we have one. So
boom.
Check out hackerspaces.org for any and all in your area.
There was an event in the Pittsburgh area recently that was really cool. It was called Maker Date. And what it was a charity auction event where it was like a concert where everybody bid on getting lessons from someone with a particular expertise in some kind of craft or making thing. And you would basically have a date with them where at the end of it, you would have produced some kind of product specific to the trade or expertise of the person that you were bidding for. One cool thing about this particular event, the reason it ended up on my radar, was Jackson from Grand Buffet, whose solo act title is Mrs. Paintbrush, was the entertainment for the evening. So I really wish that I was anywhere near Pittsburgh to check that out because it sounded awesome.
Man, I kind of want to organize one of those here. That sounds so awesome.
Right? Pretty cool.
Nerdy Show presents Orlando Maker Date.
Yeah. We're going to switch now over to Reggie Watts, but first we got a track we're going to play. So what do you got for us, Hex?
Well, speaking of the whole homemade stuff, there's a recent comic called WYSIWYG by Ed Pisker, which is basically a comic about a self-taught hacker. Well, it's the story itself is a combination of several hackers that have he's come together and bring into one character. And he's pretty much written and drawn this whole comic and is self-publishing it. There's a promotional video to go along with this with a track by our good pal Adam Warrock, also called WYSIWYG. So
WYSIWYG, of course, stands for What You See Is What You Get.
It's so a specific type of, nowadays it's used with those kind of like text editors that you see in most things like WordPress or anywhere on the internet. That where you have like bold buttons and you can hop between stuff and so, and Tumblr and all that jazz. Anyways, so this is an amazing track. You'll enjoy it. Enjoy!
Yeah, back in the days before wares and crack codes, before torrent sites helped with the downloads, folks used what they had to get yours, working past the system, telephone tones. One little kid grew to be a legend in this, with his fingers on the keys, there's a method in this, and the name of Boing Thumb spread all across the interweb, gathering passwords, bulletin boards visited, and Kevin grew a little different than you and me, isolated, now his name lives in infamy, scared of girls, scared of bullies in his school, but they never knew Kevin was playing them all for fools. Social engineering got him where he needed, networks and the system hacked into their feeds with Trojan horse viral worm malware, and now Kevin is the man, all according to plan, because
In a little while, you're going to hear an interview between me and Reggie Watts, who I introduced earlier in the episode. And the reason we got Reggie Watts in this episode is because this man is kind of something in the way of a professional speaker. You know, it's really hard to define what it is that he does. He makes music. He tells jokes. He combines them in a way that is not Weird Al Yankovic or Flight of the Conchords. It's very much kind of a spoken word performance artist sort of thing. And a lot of it's basically freestyle rap in a lot of ways, where he'll build the beats and music from scratch on stage with a bunch of loop pedals and everything. And when he's doing this and when he's freestyling, a lot of the stuff he rattles off is pretty nerdy. And some of it's very, very scientific, in fact. As you'll hear in this interview, a lot of his preferred reading is basically science articles.
Nice.
That's awesome.
I'm curious, because I mentioned Reggie Watts to people, and I assume that people will know about him because I love him and I think he's great, but who all has heard of him before tonight?
Hello.
I have.
I've heard of him through you and through Cope.
I haven't, but I saw a little clip of him, and he looked quite entertaining.
Yeah, he's cool. He's real cool.
He ended up doing some bumpers for, I believe, Comedy Central for a while, and that's how I got a hold of him, and then...
First time I ever saw him was actually, it was really strange. It was 2 years ago at South by Southwest at a really poorly attended premiere of the Drawn Together film. It was before that premiere was actually the premiere of Reggie Watts' video for his most famous video, probably Fuck Shit Stack, which is way cool, and we'll have a link to that on this page. The thing of his that got my attention most recently was that this year's South by Southwest, which I didn't attend and I'm still kicking myself for, he actually performed an original score for Legend.
What?
He had Legend playing in the background, Ridley Scott's film Legend, no sound on, and he was at a keyboard and a loop machine or something, and just talking into a mic, saying ridiculous things, riffing off of what was happening on the screen, creating a totally new soundtrack for the film. And you can actually go to his website and download that track so you can play it over Legend and watch it and have the Reggie Watts Legend experience.
That sounds amazing.
It's really cool.
It's very, very what I'm cool. doing tonight.
Reggie's also recently released an album and concert film called Alive at Central Park. Amusingly, A-Live, not Alive. Alive at Central Park.
That's a funny joke.
And you're also going to see him on the television series on IFC, Comedy Bang Bang, which is a visual adaptation of a podcast, actually, by Scott Aukerman. And you're going to hear Reggie talk about that more in just a sec. So I've been talking about it a lot. I guess we should jump into my interview with Reggie Watts. This first appeared at Consequence of Sound. And now it's playing for you for the first time in audio form.
Yes, please.
Most recently, the project of yours that got my attention was at South by Southwest. You performed your own soundtrack to Ridley Scott's Legend, and I'm a huge fan of Legend, so that was awesome for me. I was wondering how that project came about.
It was for San Francisco Sketch Fest. They wanted to do this kind of residency thing that they call the Regidency, and one of the ideas, they wanted me to score music to a silent film, and so I thought it'd be funny to score music to a non-silent film. Certainly not a new idea by any means, but I thought, you know, Legends would be a really fun one just because it's so crazy, you know, fantastic, just image-wise and kind of nonsensically. It's just a good thing to go for, plus the soundtrack, but, you know, at least the second soundtrack, but Tangerine Dream was fantastic, and I loved it as a kid, so I just kind of wanted to do a take of it.
Is that why you chose the U.S. theatrical cut over the extended director's one for the presentation?
Well, I think that's just the movie they got. I didn't really request the other one, but it was actually better because I think audience patience with, you know, something like that. I wanted to make it as painless as possible.
When you were performing it, I unfortunately wasn't there. I'm kicking myself for not being at South By this year, and this is one of many reasons. But I was listening to the recording you put on your website, and you seem to have a really good memory for all the lines in there. And I was wondering, in preparation for this, how many times did you watch the film?
I think I watched it recently within the last year, but as a kid, when that movie came out, I think I saw it like 13 times or 14 times, something like that. So I have a lot of recollection.
You're doing a show with IFC coming up called Comedy Bang Bang, and then there's this sort of spin-off or sister show that's also going along with it called Reggie Makes Music. I was wondering what you could tell me about your involvement with those projects and what it all means.
Well, Scott Aukerman has a show called Comedy Bang Bang, which is a podcast, and then I did the music, the theme song for it, and on occasion he would have me be on the show as a guest, and IFC approached them about making it into a TV show, and then they wanted me to be attached with it because of my musical involvement, and I'd be perfect for the musical dude. So that was the deal. It was pretty simple, just kind of a visualized continuation of what we were doing. And the Makes Music part was just like an addendum thing that we would add at the end of each filming day.
Okay. The way Reggie Makes Music is presented is that it's kind of a gauntlet that guests have to run before they can actually get onto the show.
In the show world, yes, that's the concept. Although that was kind of new to me when I read it. I was like, oh, that's cool.
But in reality, that they've already been warmed up by the full recording. That's the last thing that they do?
Yeah. I mean, basically, they just know that they have to at some point do it. And sometimes people didn't know. They would just spring it on them, which was really awesome. People were like, sure. You know?
There's a clip online right now with you and John Hamm, and he's doing sort of a freestyle about the show Taxi. He definitely seems a bit uncomfortable and unsure of what he's doing. Did you guys discuss that before, or was that sprung on him?
That was just brought on him. Because I was thinking, as far as I know, he's not really known as a musician, so I wanted to do something kind of simple, and that was kind of at the end of the day, and they'd done a lot. He was on the show the whole time, and, you know, so it was a lot of filming. You know, he was tired. Everybody was tired. But at the end of the day, he was like, sure, let's, you know, do something. And I had that Taxi theme in my head all day long. I couldn't stop playing it all day. So I just decided to use it as part of the loop, and you know, it was just like one idea. I'll have an idea and I just start doing something. Maybe it doesn't work and then I'll try something else. And then, you know, then it'll catch on fire. And this was just like the first idea. And then he just started talking. And I was like, well, I guess that's what this is.
Not for it to create any spoilers for the upcoming series, but who do you feel had the most profound musical experience on Reggie Makes Music?
Gosh, that's a hard one. I mean, I guess impromptu-wise, I guess I would have to say maybe Michael Cera.
Nice. I look forward to seeing how that one turns out.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Last July, you talked about a collaboration with James Murphy, possibly a 7-inch record, and it's been almost a year. I was wondering if you had any update on that project.
It's on hold. He's a busy dude, and I think he'd just gotten done with LCD at that time. He's definitely game, and you know, he threw me some ideas and kind of started talking about stuff back and forth. But I think now he's just kind of figuring out his thing, you know, getting settled. So I think when it's the right time, it'll happen. But there's no specific date set in stone or anything.
Is there any chance of seeing a CD or digital release of your hair record from Third Man?
Gosh, yes, maybe. I don't know. I'll talk to Jack. I'll ask him. I'll say, please. There's been a huge demand, and by huge, I mean one person.
I just really want to hear what all that hair sounds like, man.
I know, man. I know. I do, too.
In the video for it, Jack said it was collected from 10 or so barbershops. Is any of the hair yours, or is it all strangers?
I think it's probably all strangers, I would imagine. But, you know, obviously audition strangers.
During your performances, I get the impression that a lot of your freestyle and improv kind of act as a window into what you've been reading recently, and it's really varied. So I was wondering, how much do you read on average?
I I mean, it depends on the type of reading you're talking about. I mean, I definitely love reading about things informationally, just reciting information a lot. But it's mostly me just researching products and articles on science and achievements in design and technology, mostly. Some political stuff, but that's not as interesting to me.
Do you have any particular scientific fascinations? Like something that if you see an article about string theory, you're always going to be, oh shit, string theory. I'm checking that out right now.
Yeah, I mean, anything about like nuclear or physics oriented or astronomy or basically physics of any kind and chemical science, biotech, computer tech, anything scientific at all, pretty much. Behavior of animals or, you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter. I just look at the Google science thing and just expand it to its maximum and just go through all those articles.
Do you get in any comic books, Reggie?
No, I haven't read any in a while. I was reading the Marvel comic book app.
Yeah.
I was reading some Iron Man. Well, as a kid, I read comics a little bit. I was more into the cartoons about the comic book heroes or the TV shows that were made about them or the movies. My friend Wally Bossy, he's a super comic nerd and would tell me the entire universe and history. And also my other friend Tommy Smith, also a huge historian, if you will, and would tell me all these crazy details. And now I'll just go through each character in a comic book series, research their wiki. And so that's kind of how I come into them.
That's really how most writers of modern day books get into the characters that they're assigned to write when it happens anyway. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is true.
Well, when you're dealing with continuity that extensive, how else are you going to do it, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's, you know, an ideal world would be like, you know, someone who's a huge fan would have to also be a good writer, you know, could write something like that. But it's always kind of hard to find all of that in one package.
Yeah, that's true. Do you have any recommended reading, like one or two books that you think everybody should check out?
I haven't read a book in a long time, but I really enjoyed Dancing Woolly Masters. So I think it's by Gary Zukav. He's a kind of blends physics and Eastern mysticism together in an interesting way. But it's a really beautiful book, and it's based off of the idea of quantum physics applied like as philosophy, and then compared to Eastern mysticism.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much, Reggie. It's been a pleasure talking to you, man.
Yeah, man. Likewise.
So I had a really good time talking to Reggie Watts. Hopefully, I'll get to see him perform in person someday, because every single show is different. He's on tour right now and probably will be on tour in some way, shape, or form throughout most of the summer, so you should definitely check him out.
While we were out, the conversation shifted back to Maker Faire, Hackerspaces, the classes, and back to Jessica's class with the Parallax boards. And these are actually pretty cool. A lot of people use the Arduino board, which is a wonderful open source board built on the processing platform, just a giant stack of open source on top of open source all the way down. But a lot of people don't know about the Parallax boards, and the Parallax boards are actually pretty cool themselves, that they're wonderfully open. They use their own language. I believe it's called Spin.
Correct.
And the great thing about them is that each little development board has 8 cores on it. And so you can have 8 different cores on this little development board doing 8 different things. Why don't you sort of give us a demo of everything that's possible with that?
Absolutely everything that's possible.
Everything that is possible.
Let your imagination run wild.
Tell me. A lot of people are limited by the Arduino and what you can do with that. It is a great open source project, but how does Propeller fit in its own niche? And how does Propeller build on what other development boards out there can do?
Well, basically, I mean, I kind of see the Propeller in, you know, my non-biased working for Parallax opinion as being a next step from the Arduino. So what's neat about 8 cores is it allows you to do, well, 8 different things simultaneously. So say you have a robot and you can, you know, drive the motors in a separate processor, read sensors in another processor, communicate to a computer, you know, remotely from another one. And it's all of these tasks that before would have had to be serial. So you kind of lose, you know, data and lose resolution, but you could do it all at the same time and not miss a beat, basically. So it's really interesting, and it's really a lot of fun. We actually saw some really cool apps at Maker Faire with people using the Propeller. A lot of them have to do with video. So it can process video, VGA, and composite, NTSC.
I thought you were going to say Vidya, and I
Vidya,
was going to laugh.
Yeah, you know.
Vidya games.
So yeah, so there's one guy that came by and had a really cool video demo that was a name tag, and he wore it around his neck. It was this LCD screen, and it was, you know, doing these interactive looked like, you know, the old Windows movie video players. I forget the name of that, but you know where they had the
Windows
weird
mini player, stuff like that.
Yeah. That stuff. So it was pretty cool to see it from a microcontroller perspective. But yeah, so it's programmed in Spin, which was a language we developed specifically for the processor, since C is kind of a single-threaded language. It's what people are used to, but it's not so great for multiple cores. But we have a C and C++ compiler in the works now that the technology has kind of caught up. Some pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, you seem to be at the epicenter of cool things with, of the core elements needed for a lot of key maker projects, particularly things involving robots and blinking lights.
Yeah, and who doesn't love robots and blinking lights? They're actually quite ubiquitous at Maker Faire, so it really only attests to their popularity.
So does it have a board or extension or functionality for LAN and internet functionality?
We have a board called the Spinneret web server that has LAN capabilities and can host web servers and websites. There's actually, I forget the name of the website, but there's a guy that it's hosting a website off of it permanently with tutorials on how to do it yourself. So it's kind of a cool cyclical thing.
You too. Learn how to do your own server, and here's me hosting my own.
Wow, that's wacky.
So with the Arduino platform and everything that's sort of come around that, there are a lot of shields that are available now at Radio Shack even. Are there similar things? You mentioned the Spinneret shield. Are there a variety of boards that just sort of plug onto the Parallax board and let you build from there sort of modularly?
Yeah, so we have some planned for the Quick Start board, which is our small $30 development platform, which is what we used at the class.
Very good board.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Glad you think so. We also just released our Propeller Board of Education, which is actually kind of just everything all on the board. That
yes, Hex. I'm sure that was deliberate.
Right.
Ta-da. I don't get it.
A board
of education. It's funny on about three levels separately.
Yeah, but it basically has everything that you want on it. VGA, XB adapter, SD card, a headphone for generating audio, a microphone for taking audio in, servo headers, kind of everything that you need to do all
yeah.
on one board.
Yeah, that sounds pretty thorough, actually.
To laminify that, just two things. One, a servo, in case anyone doesn't know, is a motor that you can very precisely pinpoint. You can tell it to go to 10 degrees or 15 degrees or 180 degrees, and it'll go there and hold that position. Also, XB is a wireless platform that allows you to communicate with other XB modules up to 15 miles away, depending on how good your board is. So it's pretty cool that they have
options. Well, and antenna, obviously.
Yes, and the antenna. Mm-hmm. You'll need one of those too, but
pretty rad. So if you're still listening to us after all that, which I personally thought was pretty cool, but
and FamLab offers courses on similar technologies based on the Arduino platform in the Orlando area and your local hackerspace might as well.
And the Nest thermostat actually has an XB radio in it that nobody knows what it's there for.
What's the Nest thermostat?
The Nest.
Is it the one running Linux?
No, actually, I have no idea what it's running.
What are you talking about?
It's Speak the English. Thermostat that's made by a lot of developers from Apple. Okay. So it's like a smart thermostat. It's self-teaching, self-learning. It connects to the internet to download the weather so that it knows like whether it should be cooling the house or not. It can regulate humidity levels.
It learns
okay,
things.
So you're saying that the smartest
the
thermostat
is,
in the world
he's learning.
Has a radio that's XB. That nobody quite knows what it's there for. It's there for, I guess, future development, because the damn thing can download updates and update itself. So it's possible, we think, that it might be actually the first step into the smart home, so to speak, because, I mean, it's got not just the ability to contact your Wi-Fi router, but the ability to use XB, which has always been sort of what people wanted to use for smart home wireless. Huh.
So what you're saying is when Skynet takes over, these guys are ready to receive orders.
Yes.
They'll turn your house into an oven.
Excellent. Okay, cool.
Or the
no.
Arctic.
Well, or Arctic, because it'll know what you don't like.
If the robots were into annoying people.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with the Arctic. I'm totally more pleasant with bundling up rather than just lying naked on my bread.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like now you've doomed yourself to oven levels.
The smart house would turn it to oven. And I'm like, oh, this is not pleasant. I hate you, house. I want to burn you down, but you're already doing that for me.
All right. On that note, let's kill this episode. Taking us out is
kill it dead.
is a track from A Live at Central Park. A little bit of an excerpt from some of Reggie Watt's freestyle. This one's called Humans. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
Bye, I'm John.
Bye, I'm Cope.
Bye, I'm Kristen.
Bye, I'm Jessica.
Take care, guys.
When I take some chocolate, forget it in my pants, and go for a bike ride, and I reach in for my passport, yes. I get a gooey sensation, and then I remember what I put in there, and I feel like an idiot, because I don't remember how chocolate works. I'm a chocolate idiot, yeah. I'm a chocolate dum-dum. I'm a chocolate idiot, yeah. I'm a chocolate Gaia is calling from all around us. Whoa, whoa. Don't worry, people. If we fuck up too bad as a human race, nature's just gonna kill us all. It's alright, it just sucks for us, not for the earth, yes. It's been around for billions of years, we don't even really matter to it.
Yeah, you feeling me?
Come on, yes. Rainbow reindeer glancing down the mountain, yeah.
With a little prancing feet, it's prancing time,
yeah. With an antler, lots of antlers, attacking other antlers, fighting for supremacy. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
We've got lots of drones in the air, yeah. Lots of big remote control deadly warriors in the sky. That's no different than the antlers between you and I, yeah, yeah. Humans, they're really good at tools, yeah. They're really, really, really good at tools, yeah. They're making all kinds of tools, some for good, some for destructive purposes and stuff. And that's okay, because we have a fascination with decomposition and destruction, yeah.
I'd like to blow shit up when I was a little boy. Blow shit up when I was a little boy. It's in our nature to see how things destroy in a beautiful way.
Yeah, cause you got to fight. You got to fight, yes.
You got to fight, yeah. You got to fight to take somebody out. Tonight!
Thank you, Mr. Burton, for listening to this week's episode of Nerdy Show. If you have questions or comments, please feel free to send them to info@nerdyshow.com. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, Dungeons and Doritos, comics, videos, and more, go to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe, Mr. Burton, to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes Store. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @NerdyShow or friend us on Facebook. We're not brought upon this world to get it, Mr. Burton. If you enjoyed what you heard, support Nerdy Show by telling a friend. Or better yet, give us your money, Mr. Burton, by visiting the Nerdy Show and picking up a t-shirt or donate directly for cool nerdy perks, Mr. Burton. Perks, Mr. Burton. I will bring you to the Hall of the Upside Down Sinners where you'll be skinned alive!